All right.
So good. Recording in progress. Got it.
Yeah, recording is in progress. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another lovely episode of the Over Sharon Show. Today, we have another guest, and I'm so excited. But I'm first, I'm going to turn it over to Sharon because she's going to shuffle up some cards. Actually, you know, while you shuffle, I can read the quote. I always do that.
Please do. Yes.
I will. And then we'll say hello to our lovely guest. Today's quote is from the Tao. The supreme good is like water, which nourishes all things without trying to. It is content with the low places that people disdain. Thus, it is like the Tao. In dwelling, live close to the ground. In thinking, keep to the simple. In conflict, be fair and generous. In governing, don't try to control. In work, do what you enjoy. And that's verse 35 of the Tao Te Ching.
Based.
Sweet. I wish I heard it. I totally was not paying attention.
You didn't hear it? I'll read it again. It's fine.
Okay. Read it again.
I'll read it faster this time. I'll do it funny. The supreme good is like water, which nourishes all things without trying to. It is content with the low places that people disdain. Thus, it is like the Tao. In dwelling, live close to the ground. In thinking, keep simple. In conflict, be fair and generous. In governing, don't try to control. In work, do what you enjoy. That's verse 35.
That was beautiful.
Yeah, it's a great verse.
I love it. Well, our card today is the Knight of Cups. Ooh. And I've gotten this card before.
Ooh, I think that's our guest. I think that represents our guest.
Hey, wait a minute. Yeah.
Knight of Cups.
That's you, buddy.
Did I pull that card for you?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to.
No wonder I was like, I've pulled this card before recently.
I thought you were joking. Yeah. That was the first card you pulled on me. Yeah.
I pulled that card
for him the other day.
Why don't you introduce our guest there, Sharon, since you guys are synchronizing it up.
This is cray cray.
I made up a word.
So Alex and I met through Burn Bear. I always want to say it like Born Bear, but he gets mad at me because he says it's like Burn. But even though he's Irish and he says it Born, it's whatever. It's Burn Bear. Yeah. Anyway, Burn Bear, I guess, had sent Alex a SoundCloud song that I had shared with Burn Bear. And because Alex was looking for people to participate in singing background vocals or doing music and stuff with him for Olive Tree Bear Music. And so we met several months ago and we just become really good friends. I introduced him to Brandon and to other people. And yeah, I mean, it's just been really epic, really awesome. And he's a great friend.
Bless.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Alex, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself for the viewers and maybe some of the nicknames that you go by also so people might recognize you. Gandalf with all these different names.
yeah, exactly.
Mithrandir. Forgotten about that one.
Alexander the Bouzouki man. Well, I'm half Greek, half British. So, I have all these nicknames. I'm really not proud of any of them. It's just different genres that I do, really. You know, I mean, I don't want to cross over my electronic music with my orchestral music, although I have done that with Olive Tree Bear, actually. I've done a crazy crossover of like pop music, whereas all the backing instruments are just like orchestral if you think about it. Wow. So, I was just born into music, you know what I mean? I mean, my dad was a trumpet player. My mom was a choreographer, you know, dancer. So it was unavoidable. I was just surrounded by music every day, all day. Yeah.
Amazing.
That's a good synchronicity between you and Sharon, because as we learned on the last episode, Sharon was born into a Von Trapp family. which I learned what that meant a few months ago, which means her parents are also musical performers.
The heels are alive.
Yeah. With the sound of Sharon's parents on TV.
Yeah, that was awesome. I mean, my parents never saw fame in that sense, but still, we were a musical family, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. That's great. So now, what would you say that you do now, I guess, for a living? How do you support yourself with the music?
Well, I write library music. What library music is basically is you're feeding the beast with all kinds of possible music it might want to use. So you have either Hollywood or you have the BBC in England or any private corporation that needs like a music bed or a musical theme or music for a documentary or a game or an advert or anything. They kind of, they tap into this database and they put keywords. And best, and this is a very professional platform. I mean, you can't use it for like small productions. It has to be like a wide range broadcasting thing. So not for streaming music. It has to be like broadcast. So that's one of the first things I ever did, like 20 years ago. Even more than 20 years. It was back in 1997, wow. 98. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that was the first thing I ever did because, well, I was like 17 back then. So I was like really wanting to produce music, really wanted to learn more because I had the classical training, but I had no idea about producing and electronics and all the technology side of it. So so I walked into this one studio and I said, can I be a fly on the wall and kind of just see how it's all done? Because I'm a musician, but I haven't got any experience. So in a very short time, I learned a few of the skills and I helped out. And I said, what is this? Where is this music going? He said, probably some documentary. I'm like, wow. So
yeah,
this is going to be like matched to picture. It's not just going to be something for the radio or some background music. It's something that's going to be, it's going to accompany and kind of, what's the word? It creates an underscore of feelings to what you're already watching, you know?
Absolutely.
So like you might be, yeah. So you might be watching just like whales, not, you know, whales under the sea and everything. But if you can enhance that experience, that was always my dream, to be able to enhance the visual experience. So so then I started working on some projects with a percentage. Like I got a small percentage, like 12.5 for doing a few things. And then I was so creative where I earned my way gradually to a higher percentage. And some of these documentaries went quite well, you know what I mean? So I would get royalties from that. I'm like, wow, this earned me royalties. You know, I never expected to get paid from this. You know, it's like, wow. So,
it's kind of like you were just doing what you love, like we said in that Dow quote, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, yeah, I mean, I'm still learning. I was learning back then. I'm still learning now. It's been an interesting process. And I've also written songs for pop performers, pop singers, which... that has been interesting as well, especially in Greece, because I'm in Greece, everyone, by the way. So, yeah. So in Greece, it's really interesting because I made a few connections and they're like, dude, you're quite good with electronic music. Do you think you can do dance music? I'm like, well, no, that's too cheesy. I can't do dance music. And they're like, come on, go on, give it a try. I'm like, nope, I'm not going to give it a try. I want complicated music. I want based, you know, woke music. I don't want to do just crappy, you know, dance music. And then again they said, come on, give it a try. I'm like, all right then, four chords. And I wrote this track that went really well. You know, I'm like, whoa. Do you guys want me to explain even more about this? I mean, I don't know. Is it interesting for you guys?
Why not? Oh, yeah, this is totally cool.
Cool. Well, I mean, from then onwards, it just escalated and escalated a lot. I mean, it was crazy. I mean, I put together this portfolio. I was like, my only experience was like 2.5 years, maybe 3 years. And there was this composer in Greece who was looking for an assistant. He was looking for a right-hand man for his stuff. And he was like the most well-known composer at the time. This is 20 years ago, like 2001, I think. Yeah.
Mm.
So I told him, well, you know, I actually live in London, so I don't have a permanent base in Greece. I'm not sure how we can make this collaboration work because it would be difficult. So I flew over there just to meet him and kind of hang out in his studio and discuss the possibility of maybe me leaving London and living in Greece for a period of maybe a year or two, depending on the contract. So so when I visited his studio, we out of the blue, we created the track, and he went and released it, and it became like a number one hit in Greece for many weeks. It was like the number one track, you know. And he said, like, dude, you know, I'll pay you to come back to Greece, actually, because I was away for a few years. So I said, well, you know, I don't have any cousins or much of a family here, so I don't even have a house. He said, I'll pay for the house. I'll pay for everything, you know. I'm like, wow, must be nice, you know. So I was really stoked. I'm like, wow, this guy's like investing so much in me, you know. So
the MBN moment, the must be nice moment.
Yeah, it was so excited, you know. It's exciting. So I got in the real deep end, and I met all the grabbly, you know, record labels and all the grabbly behind the scenes television things and everything. It's like everything I avoided and didn't really like, because I didn't really like how the things were being made, but I did like the result. So like I did like movies, you know, blockbuster movies. I just didn't want to know exactly, you know, everything that's behind it and the whole psychology and the whole grabble. You know, it was never something I liked, but I stomached it. And since then, I've been doing the same thing more or less. I've been just like producing or writing songs for artists, or just coming up with melodies and producing them and showcasing them. And most of the time they get accepted, you know. So I've been doing that for the past 20 years. It's quite funny.
That's really awesome. So are you at this point where you're well known, your rapport or whatever goes before you, and people say, yeah, I know his stuff, and like I want him to write me a song, or I would choose from his collection or whatever to do my next thing? Or is that how it works? And like when you write or create a new song and you put it out there, like is it through that system you were talking about earlier, where it's like almost like a web of info that you crawl for like keywords, and then you find a song, and then is that how you submit your songs, or how does that all work?
Okay. Well, the thing I told you about the database is that's mostly for TV and games and those kind of industries. But if someone wants to kind of find out, I'll put it another way. I am quite well known in Greece for what I do, especially for my production skills. Not so much for the songwriting, although I have like released, you know, like around 30 something of my own written songs, and I've produced I don't even know how many. It's like 110 in total all these years.
111, maybe, could it be?
Yeah, that's right. 111 tracks.
333, exactly.
Just to quickly get it in there, when you say written, do you mean you even wrote the lyrics to it? Or when you say written, do you just mean like you wrote the melody line, but you didn't put the lyrics in yet. You just let them write the lyrics. How does that?
Yeah. I'm not very good with words. So unless it's like something, it's an instant download. I get downloads sometimes. Well, partial downloads. I might get a chorus, something mm-hmm. like a chorus, which is coherent and interesting, but I can't actually sit down and I'm not patient enough to come up with a nice way to glue the whole song together, if you know what I mean. So so there are a few occasions. I'll tell you an interesting story. I mean, once I was like really depressed, like it was like a few weeks before my dad passed away, and I was kind of looking up at the sky, and the sky was gray, and I was like, I was so depressed, and I'm like, I wish the sun would kind of appear through the clouds and kind of suck my soul up there in a very poetic way, you know. If only I could go over the clouds and just experience the sunlight for a moment, you know, just to give me extra strength. So at that point, I was like, fly me to the bright star in the sky. I love the sun, and you know why. So that sounds very mysterious, because no one really knows why except for myself. You know, I would know why that would make me happy. So so I made a demo of that song. And like years later, my record label called me and they said, hey, dude, you know, we've got this sunscreen company that makes, you know, sunblock products. And suntan lotion, I suppose, and all kinds of sun products. And they're looking for a track. Do you have anything? I'm like, I was depressed once and I wrote a song about the sun. Yeah, I guess you could have that. So they listen to it and they're like, wow, yeah, we want this track, but we don't want it with Alex's voice. You know, we would like to have a nice female voice to make it really happy and whatever, you know.
Absolutely. So that's easily done.
Yeah. So I recorded this young singer, and she was very happy to record it at the time. And we showed it to the record label and they're like, wow, we got the job. And there, you know, there's a down payment for this, and your track is going to be sponsored like on a 6-month campaign. It's going to be played like endlessly, brainwashed all over Greece, you know.
On the commercials.
On the commercials, yeah. And it went really well. I got awards for that. I got all kinds of things, recognition. I was on television. Wow. Like, I'm like, I don't really like what comes with it, but yeah. Actually, if you type in Alex Leon featuring Demi, The Sun, it's actually called The Sun. Yeah, you'll hear those lyrics. Yeah.
Cool. Flying I'll have to the brightest. Do that.
Yeah, it's called The Sun. It's a nice track, really pop, dancey, you know, it's a nice track. But it's interesting how I didn't really try to write the track. It just came to me because I was depressed.
Right.
Weird. Became the happiest song of the year, you know.
Oh, yay.
I think it's funny.
It turned into something good.
Yeah, most people, when they're depressed, they go to like a doctor and get a pill, you know, and like, it's like, I just wrote a song and paid my bills and had a good time. And you know what I mean? Like, yeah, that's how it should be done.
Yeah, do it right. Get her done.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Most of the time I come up with melodies. It's like, na, 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 na. I'm like, that sounds like a nice little verse. So I sit down, I lay down the chords. I'm like, wow, wouldn't it be clever if I did the so you have this kind of weird wobbly bass going on, and then you have na 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 na, and it's like, wow, this is trippy, you know. So I instantly produce what I'm doing. I don't like so I create this feeling, and because I want to retain my energy of being able to go on to the next one, what I usually do is I get in touch with a lyricist. I've given opportunities to many people who are not professional lyricists, and sometimes it's worked out nicely, you know. But most of the time I give it to professional lyricists who have a background of of well, success, I suppose. So,
go ahead. I was going to ask you a quick question.
I'll answer your initial question here. So usually what I do is I either forward them to my record label, who has like a plethora of singers, male and female. How dare you? And or I have connections with already, you know, singers that I've collaborated in the past. And they sometimes call me up. It's like, hey, Alex, you don't happen to have a miserable kind of heartbroken ballad, cheesy kind of whatever. I'm like, well, it's funny you mentioned that.
Because
yeah.
Because I just wrote one.
Yeah, just wrote one. Yeah.
That's funny. That's awesome.
It's funny. You're kind of like a herbalist, but of music instead. People call you up and they're like, I need this for this feeling. And you're like, I gotcha. I got right.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. So the quick question I had for you was, and maybe it varies, but it sounds to me like the melody comes first to you. Like you said, na, 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 na. And, mm-hmm. you know, that comes to you. And then you're like, okay, I'm going to put that track down. And then you just come up with all the backup for it, like musically. Is that what happens for the most part? I just want to see how, like, a composer's brain works, because it's amazing to me, like how a song comes together fully like that. I've never written my own song, so I just sing other people's songs.
it's interesting because every time it's a different way. It's not exactly the same way. I mean, sometimes it's a musical thing where you'll just play on the keyboard and then this and this goes nicely. All right, so. And then other times I might be having a shower. And I'm like, I just come up with a groove, like, I'm like, wow, that's a nice groove, you know?
I think,
so I might just hum things. And then I'm kind of at the same time downloading and contemplating and kind of freestyling. And I'm like, okay, na, 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 na. Na 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 na. I'm like, wow, that's so groovy. You know, it's like, this is really nice. And I might make a temporary beat, like with just a bass drum and a snare or whatever, you know, just to not forget the idea. And then I kind of sing my voice on what I consider to be the chorus part. And then I kind of work backwards and forwards to fill in the gaps, like, okay, what would the verse be like? Na 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 na, kind of go with the previous kind of groove. And I'm like, mm-hmm. okay. So once I have the structure, that's when I hit someone up. I'm like, dude, we need something that is kind of empowering. Not grabbly or anything. Let's try and not get it too silly, you know, empowering for the self and for the psyche of people. So like, I am a bit of a grabber in the sense that I direct the narrative. It's like, hey, we want to pass this now. We want to make people feel good. So, so I'm a bit of a grabber in that sense. And that's how, Sharon, of course you recognize which track I was talking about, right? Singing, mm-hmm. yeah?
Yeah, I don't remember the name of it, but you've shared that one with me before.
Oh, so. Dear. It's the Fool's Choir.
Is it? Oh, my gosh.
It's the Fool's Choir. So it's like...
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah.
Here I am, untouchable. So, yeah.
Awesome track, dude.
Yeah, that was
sorry. It's just because I know some of the other songs you've given me and given us.
Oh, yeah, you've heard
that
many.
It's not like I put two and two together that's the one we already released.
I mean, you're my go-to person when it comes to female vocals. I mean, you've heard so many tracks, and you know, most of them are not even released, so everything might sound familiar to you now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I heard one of my songs once, not under the olive tree bear persona, so to speak, on the other one. And overstating this, but I heard one track on the radio. I'm like, oh shit, someone stole my music. Like, someone that was supposed to be mine, dude. Someone stole it.
It's my song.
And then I remembered that I collaborated with someone, and this was an actually released song, properly done, and I was paid for the song. But I freaked out because I couldn't. I forgot
exactly.
About it.
Exactly. You forget totally.
Yeah. My stomach was twisted. I'm like,
oh God,
who stole this?
My baby.
Well,
how dare you steal my music?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's hilarious.
Cray, cray.
Yeah.
So you have been doing this for so long. Do you have any comments about how music has changed over the last 20 years that you've experienced or seen? And maybe even Brandon can comment as well, because he's a DJ, so he knows a lot about all that stuff as well from the DJ perspective.
Well, I mean, I was a classically trained pianist and I had all this classical training, so when I saw that so many people had access to technology, I started to notice that this is becoming a bit too simplistic, isn't it? It's like music used to be a whole, you know, storytelling, and now it's become like four chords and then three chords and then just two chords, and in many cases, as Brandon knows very well, it's been one chord, like the whole track's like
that's hilarious.
It's like I'm not enjoying this, you know.
Can I interrupt you for one second?
Yeah.
That reminds me of that guy, Rick Beato. Do you know? I'm sure you've seen his stuff on YouTube.
Who is he? I know the name very well.
He's kind of salt and pepper hair guy, has a little son who is freaking, has perfect pitch. And the little boy can turn around and he can play like a random dissonant set of chords. And the little boy will be like, you know, clearly, sorry, my throat is all screwed up right now, but
yeah,
he can like perfectly pitch out exactly which chords he's playing or which keys he's playing and be like, he talks about a lot. Sorry again.
It's okay.
Sorry. He talks about how music these days is just really boring and like using the same chords over and over, and nothing is like new and creative like it used to be. So anyway, that's to the point you were talking about.
Exactly. Yeah. I've seen some of his video. Now that I saw his face, it's a. I keep on opening the window. Can you guys hear the dogs? The neighbors.
A little bit. It's okay.
Yeah, it's all right.
It's not enough.
Yeah. Yeah, Ricky Beato is, I like the way he presents everything. He's really cool. Yeah. And I feel the same way as well. I mean, it's like, I've been noticing that everything has become just too simplified. It's like art in general is like, okay, I've got a red box and I've got a yellow box and that represents the sea and that. Just
paint
use
something.
Some interesting paint something. I don't want to see squares. It's like, yeah.
Like throwing the paintbrush to the wall and, you know, just getting like sprinkles and you're like, that's art. Seriously, any freaking 5-year-old can do that.
It's an expression. Okay. It's definitely an expression, but it's not art. Yeah, for
exactly.
sure.
Exactly.
How dare you? I notice myself with music because
I paint like that, damn it.
Yeah, how dare you? I'm just like slowly pulling down my impressionist artwork, like, no.
Don't bring your towel down.
Yeah. It's just a window. You could actually see the gray day it is out there. Nice and rainy.
Oh,
the winder.
But what I was going to say, though, with music, what I noticed, because, you know, I do a lot of weddings, and then for a time I was doing these parties for senior citizens. It was like on a random Wednesday from like 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. And we called it the seniors prom. Ooh, that was a nice one. We called it the seniors prom. And so I was pretty familiar with older music, but doing that, some of the people there were like, you know, older. You ever see Dirt? You know how old Dirt is? These people are like older than that. So it was great, though. They were awesome. They were dancing the whole time and having a good time. Some people were out there in the wheelchairs. So they would always ask me for music and I'd look up stuff. And I brought a lot of that stuff to the weddings that I was doing, or some of it I throw it in there for some of the older folks. And what I started to notice with music is the same kind of thing, I think, with like TVs and movies and all of our entertainment, which is it started off very wholesome, right? Started off really nice. And it was like mostly good feeling stuff. And it, even if you think about the earlier stuff like symphony music, and then you get into all this stuff and even jazz. And then when you start getting into rock, the message on it, most of it was either positive or feeling good, or maybe it was just how you were feeling. Maybe something bad did happen, but it was just an expression of that. And I see as like time went on, you get into the 50s and then the 60s and then the 70s and then the 80s, the music just has this message. I mean, even in the 60s, I think there was more of a positive message, but I think that's where it kind of took the grabble. And that's kind of where I feel like it split from there. And it just started to get more, I don't know, I guess you could say grabbled. But I mean, but once you get into like the 80s and rap music and stuff, and this is it was always the argument that they're just talking about what they're seeing. You know, we're just talking about what we're seeing. And I was like, yeah, they're just expressing what they see and they feel. And then later I noticed that all the kids that didn't live that lifestyle, you know, kids more like me, I guess I kind of live some of that lifestyle a little bit, but put me people more even in the nicer suburbs and all this stuff. They started to emulate that behavior, talk like that, dress like that and stuff like that. So it was really able to shift the entire culture and the entire society. So mm-hmm. And now, like you said, at least that music was complicated and fun and stuff. But then it just started to get really simple. And then now, like you said, you just have these songs. And I mean, it's great because anybody could just be a star now. Anyone could just make a star a video and put it on YouTube and they could just be mm-hmm. a sensation. But it just seems to me like it's fording the escapism, I guess you could say. It's more in that realm of, I don't know, I guess you could say fantasy or whatever. But it's. I don't know. It's kind of hard to explain, but you could totally see the clear divergence from where it started in pop music and all the stuff, like I was saying. So that's one major thing that I noticed. And again, you know, I'm 45, so I was around since the 70s. And you said you were probably born around 81 or 80 or something like that.
80, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm sure that you witnessed that. I mean, totally. What was it like actually compared to here in the US over in Europe? Because like I said, we had, you know, the rock was crazy. Everyone loved rock. And then once rap hit, it was like, at first it was shunned and people didn't like it, but that's what made it popular. That's why everyone was like, oh, I got to listen to this stuff. My mom doesn't want me listening to this or whatever it is. I'm a rebel. I'm listening to all this rap music and they're swearing and stuff. Did you guys mm-hmm. experience that over in Europe too? Or was it a little later? Or what do you think?
It was probably a little later. I mean, for young people nowadays, it's very difficult to picture a world where there's no internet, you know? I mean, we've lived through it, but I mean, it's fascinating to see that. Like you guys in the States, you had pioneers of rock music like ZZ Top, all these huge bands. But in Europe, we only got like the number one single from the entire album that had the awareness, but the entire band didn't have much of an awareness here. You know, you had like British bands like Iron Maiden that would kind of be in the same genre, but in a more European kind of context, I suppose. So you didn't have that kind of Western swag to the rock music. Or if you were to hear anything based on rock and roll, you know, that kind of, they tried to change it so as to not appear like they're copying the American style. And that's what made all genres in Europe, I think, very cheesy, because everything was like, okay, we're going to copy this, but not exactly, though. You know, we're
going to do it it's like Diet Coke, way. Right? It's like Diet Coke or Diet Pepsi, right? Yeah.
Ew. Who exactly. wants that? Yuck.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, yeah, we'll... This is really trending in the States at the moment. We'll do it, but with tea. With tea.
Hilarious. For tea yeah. time.
That could be tea like time. A sketch, everything you do. We got to do it with tea. Like, we're going to carjack this guy and steal and smash his face with a brick, but we got to do it with tea. Like,
but that, I mean, that created opportunities as well. It's like, okay, fuck it. Like, let's just do something original. So like all these bands which had no precedent, like the Beatles kind of songwriting styles that then became the Oasis kind of style, which then became, you know what I mean? So like these kind of influences are quite unique for like Britain and the British scene and Europe. Well, just, you know, whenever we're talking about Europe, we're mainly talking about English speaking language countries. So it's just Britain, really, you know, all the rest we're doing really awkward music. Like, you know, German pop music is like, eh. Or like Austrian pop music, or it's like, eh. Everything's a bit, eh. It's like, we like your traditional styles because they're unique, but you know.
That's funny.
It's very funny, especially when European musicians or singers try to copy what is trending. So what is trending is like music that is being generated in the States. So if they were to write a new song, they will kind of emulate the accent of what it should sound like if it was written in the States, which sounds hilarious because you have Greeks or British people or Germans trying to put on a Californian accent. Because most of what they get to see on their screens is produced in California by actors who live in California. So it's very strange to get a Californian accent in Austria or somewhere. It's like, what are you doing? It's like,
right, right. I've always wondered, because, you know, I grew up listening to music with a musical ear, right? And I love languages as well. So there I would listen to the accents as well. So to me, when I would hear somebody singing and then I'd be like, oh, you know, they're, I didn't know that they were British because they freaking sounded American. You know what I mean? As they're singing or whatever, or I wouldn't know. Yeah. I mean, it just, to me, it was like, why don't they sing in British accent? That's their accent. Like, why does it have to sound American? I don't know. To me, it was just weird. What do you think about that?
I don't know what to think anymore because, I mean, as you guys can notice, my accent isn't exactly British because my entire life I've been hanging out with like Americans, Canadians, Irish. I mean, I grew up with an Irish family and like...
Oh, I didn't know I that. Mean,
yeah, well, my mother is British and my dad Greek. Yeah, so when I was born in Greece, my mom just felt like she wanted to hang out with English speaking people because she was like, my dad was working all day and she was like alone at home. And she was just hooking up. I mean, we would go to the park and she would hear someone that spoke English. And she's like, oh, your son is the same age as mine. Let's hang out. So they exchanged numbers and the kind of, we had Christmas and New Year's and everything. Yeah, we had all these celebrations where it's like similar age group of children. Like you had all these three-year-olds and some of the mums and fathers were Scottish. Another couple was from Ireland. Another couple was from Canada. Another couple is from elsewhere. So my accent is very, you know, bastardized. But when it comes to singing, I kind of, it feels weird saying like, especially when the letter A is, or O, when the letter O is involved. It's like...
Talk about that, please.
It's like, you got a song that says, you closed the door. Like you closed the door on me. Like it's like a sad song of someone who's like he's been left. So like it's very strange to kind of sit in front of a microphone and say, you closed the door.
Door. Go,
oh. It's like
British accent.
Yeah, you closed the door. It's like it doesn't feel liberating. But when you say da, da, it's like, ah, I feel more liberated. That's, you know, it's funny. Like I, but when I've got a round mouth like that, it's like, oh, it's
the
like,
door.
The door.
Close the door.
Close the door on me.
Yeah, yeah. You don't have this sense of liberation, you know. So I think that's the, for me at least, that's my explanation. Yeah.
Well, here's another thing, because it's related also to like vocalists and people who've been trained to sing. I wasn't trained by any special training or anything. I just learned to sing when I was, you know, in my mother's womb pretty much, because everybody sang. Oh. So, but like, I know that I've heard, I did take one voice class in college one time. Mm-hmm. But it, you know, it was just one class. I don't even remember much about it, but I have heard that in voice training, there are certain words that you pronounce a certain way when you're singing them, because they just come out better, they sound better, and mm-hmm. it's easier, even if that's not how you really say them. But when mm-hmm. you sing them, you have to sing them with that, like with your mouth in a certain way and open maybe in a certain way. Do you know anything about that? And maybe that's why some of these accents come out more Americanized, or I don't know. I'm just reaching because I don't know.
Yeah, it's a bit of both. It's one of the things is what you just said. And the other reason is that we have a reference, like international hits, especially in popular music, are usually written, produced, and sung in the United States. So like you always have this reference, like even if you're someone in Britain and you're recording a track which has a groovy bass, like a drum rhythm that is very reminiscent of something that maybe was popular in the anytime in the past, like something that Quincy Jones might have produced or something that you would have heard of before. So like automatically you're in a mindset of how this should be performed, and it should kind of be performed with not necessarily an American accent, but I mean certain words certain words ought to be a bit more like, instead of ah, more like eh, like American, instead of American.
Funny.
It's like, so you have a reference. It's like when you're like a dress code, like sneakers go with certain things. It's like, it kind of automatically goes that way, I feel. Yeah. Which is hilarious when you hear Korean people doing Korean pop singing English lyrics. It's hilarious. Yeah.
Yeah, and people who will like do, let's say, you know, karaoke or whatever, but they don't know the actual lyrics. And let's just say they've heard the song and then they're trying to mimic. And I'm trying to remember this old one. It was like a Mariah Carey type song. And somebody was, I think it was I Can't Live, when Mariah Carey had done the I Can't Live. And mm-hmm. then someone was from some other country was trying to mimic it. And it was like, I can't leave you. Like, because they don't know what they're saying. They don't know what they're saying. So they just hear the sounds and they just mimic the sounds. Yeah.
I thought we weren't going to talk about when we went to karaoke, Sharon. How dare you? I can't leave without you anymore.
Yeah. Which reminds me, I mean, Sharon's recordings were of a karaoke, I think. That's the very first thing I heard of you. I'm like, wow. Wasn't it? It was karaoke night, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
We're going to have to do some karaoke nights when we get to Sedona or something. Could it be?
Yeah. Sweet, could it be? I'm going to see if I can take a, like a little karaoke machine. Maybe I'll borrow my brother's karaoke machine and take it up.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah. I would buy my own, but I just haven't like gotten around to it.
We could do tarot and karaoke. We could do karaoke.
Karaoke chicken.
Karaoke.
Is that teriyaki chicken? Is that free range? Because you know.
Cool.
Oh my god.
Teriyaki
chicken. Oh, that's ridiculous. But so back to what something Brandon was saying. He was talking about rap and stuff, and I think my voice is going out here. But he was saying that people like, go ahead.
Declining quality, is that what you wanted to say? No.
Yeah.
When he was going to ask you, like, when did you see that coming through to Europe or whatever? And I was just going to comment that even though I was like going like this when Brandon was saying that, you know, people were like, oh, that's forbidden. So I'm going to listen to it more because my mom won't let me or something like that. Right. Yeah. That was like, to me, I was like, not interested. I was not interested in rap is the funny part. I was just kind of like, mm-hmm. it just didn't seem to me to be that interesting, at least in the early days. Now, much later, I'm going to say about 2008, 2009, 2010, that's when I started maybe hearing a little bit more about Biggie Smalls and Tupac and stuff, and maybe knowing a little bit about their stuff and thinking, yeah, this is pretty cool. Like some of their stuff was pretty cool. But before that, I had never really like encountered it much or anything like that. And like to this day, I don't know that much. I just know a couple, you know, I know some Tupac stuff. I know some Biggie Smalls. And I don't listen to it constantly, but I know of it. But anyway, what are your comments about go ahead, Brandon.
I was going to say really quickly to add to that, what I didn't talk about much or what I didn't say really was the lyrics. I think in rap, it started kind of like having a good time. You know, you have the Rapper's Delight, right, is the infamous first song, Rapper's Delight by, oh my God, I can't remember the name of the group. It'll come back to me. Anyway, so it's like hip, hop, hip, hop, you don't stop.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, so that's, allegedly, that's like the first rap song. Everyone's like, that's the original rap song, it's the first one, and it was all about having a good time and hanging out and partying. And then later you get some other lyricists like KRS-One and Public Enemy, and they're talking about social change and how things are wrong. And they're just like pointing it out, and they're not really glorifying it though. But then it comes where people are starting to glorify it in their lyrics. And then it just, I see later, like I guess it started in the 90s, but then by the 2000s, it was like just all materialism. And, you know, it's all about Bentleys and all about this stuff. And even Wyclef Jean and The Rock made a song, It Doesn't Matter. And they're talking about Bentleys and stuff. You know, he's like, I got a 100 Bentleys in the West Indies. It doesn't matter. You know, and I really love that song because of it. And it was a pop song, which is hilarious. But other than that, most of it just went to materialism and, you know, how many bitches I got and how much money I got. And yeah, it's funny because some of these rappers are like new and they're talking about they have a Bentley. I'm like, did you rent it? Because, you know, how did you write this song? It's not even authentic.
This is your first song ever.
Yeah. Like, did you steal the Bentley? Is that what happened? And now you're rapping about it. Now you're famous. What's going on? You know,
I just looked it up. The Sugar Hill Gang. Is that?
Yeah. Hill Gang. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah.
I never even heard of them.
And then it was remade later by the Def Squad by Eric Sermon, Redman, Keith Murray. Yeah, I know a lot about rap music, but yeah, specifically, I just wanted to talk about the lyrics and how they declined as well. Not just the beats getting simpler, but also the lyrics really focusing on materialism.
I know. I'm looking at the lyrics right now by the Sugar Hill Gang. I mean, it's very groovy and just bang. To the bang bang boogie, let's rock, you don't stop. I mean, it's very, you know, jumpy, kind of feel good. But my perspective.
That's how they grabbed you in, you know?
Yeah.
I've heard all these conspiracy theories. I don't know which is the right one. I mean, I think the truth is somewhere in the middle. So like there is grabble, but there also is the kind of tendency to be naughty. Not everyone. I mean, Sharon didn't have the tendency to be naughty, but I mean, many people have this kind of tendency as children to kind of, oh, I'll do that because that causes a reaction. Oh, look, now I'm getting attention. So I think the same thing happened with all art forms like music and, I mean, thrillers. You know, thrillers became more psychologically shocking. You know, any way to kind of get your attention to shock you by describing things that will either scare you or intimidate you or make you feel envy. It's like the Bentley you mentioned or things like that, you know. And then I don't know when, but there was a switch where it just became full retard. It's just, I'm not sure when that happened exactly, but yeah, it has happened. And with music as well. I mean, you can hear the same beats. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, some of these beats of the latest rap songs are very interesting, but they do seem to be repeating too much. I mean, you'll hear an almost identical beat maybe like 50 or 100 times. It's like, you guys are just overdoing it. You're over-trying, you know, over-trying. Yeah.
They're oversharing.
Oversharing. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, when someone succeeds at something, even if it's with a fake Bentley or whatever, you know, rented Bentley, I mean, you do see other people trying to emulate the supposed success by rapping about similar stuff, making a beat which is extremely similar, and kind of just copying, just even having reference. And if that wasn't enough, you have the dissing, you know, the whole beef challenge between rappers, which is kind of intertwined in the actual beat. So I can see why it went full retard so quickly. Yeah.
The East Coast versus the West Coast. And yeah. I mean, I didn't even know any of that stuff until maybe I heard Snoop Dogg or somebody talk about it, Dr. Dre, or I don't know.
Yeah, I think the beef thing was like another way. It was like a marketing scam, you know. It's just like, oh, let's just start all these beefs. But I like what you said about conspiracy theory, because I always like to take everything down to, you know, what it could be logically. And, you know, there could be, and a lot of people talk about evidence of all these grabblers inside music and, you know, only making all this music on purpose. But I think, like you were saying, it's a natural trend that happens that just follows society, and people see the other rappers becoming famous, and as society changes, they're just kind of going with the flow and with what works, and it's kind of like all happening at once. So I don't think it was like this grand scheme. It could have been, maybe somebody had a grand plan to do it, but the people who let it happen were just us, you know, our parents, the people around us, just the people who said yes to it, listened to the music, accepted it, and just kept going with it. And then I was really never a fan like yourself of pop music myself. So once rap started to go pop, I really, even in the early 90s, there was people like KRS-One and others, that song by Third Bass called Pop Goes the Weasel. Pop, pop goes the weasel, the weasel. And that's what they're talking about, how people in rap are going pop. So there was this split. And yeah, it was really just a choice. It wasn't like some conspiracy is what even made it happen. Yeah, so I like to bring that stuff up because people are always like, oh, it's them, it's they, it's all these people. And I just heard somebody recently, Howdy Mikulski, actually, if I say his last name right, Howdy
Mikulski.
He called the them, the they, the Illuminati, the Dark Controllers, the Bilderberg Group. He calls them influencers, which is amazing. Exactly. They're not controllers, they're influencers. And this is a point where we could see it, because maybe all the record executives were just promoting the people who are into materialism, or maybe it's just how they're getting rich. You know what I'm saying? Like, maybe that's, they were just following the money. Everything doesn't have to be a giant conspiracy. You know, I'm not that you're saying that, but I'm just saying for the listeners.
And I do like what Howdy was saying about that, that people don't control you. And I think we talked about this in a previous episode, Brandon, where we kind of mentioned that it's not like people still need to take responsibility and, you know, and not say, oh, they controlled me, or it's like saying the devil made me do it. Or
I was just going to say that. I was, and I thought right? of this the other day, great synchronicity, because there's actually a rap album by a rapper named Paris and it's called The Devil Made Me Do It. And I thought about that the other day. Yeah. I was trying to find it, but I couldn't find the song. I didn't look very hard. I was like trying to find it on Instagram to put it with a post. But yeah, I think that's such a cop out, because I learned at a young age, you know, we've talked about our own belief systems and stuff before, but I was, you know, grew up Catholic, was an altar boy. And then I got into born again Christianity with my mother around fourth grade, right around there somewhere. And I really love the Bible. I used to read all the time, and I had this understanding, and I understood that. It was kind of also like when people would say, oh, why did God take my father? Why did God take my, whoever I'm with or whatever, you know, my lover. And it's like, God didn't, I had this understanding about how it wasn't God that took them. It's just kind of like I said, there are these influencers, right? And God is this influencer. Oh no, I'm really going to get it now. Yeah, there could be creator, a God, an all father that created everything. But at this point, I feel like it's more of an influence now in the world. And if you want to, you know, if you want to get anything positive out of it, you have to align your actions, your thoughts and emotions and everything and create action to go along with it. So the fact that people say the devil made me do it or whatever, it's just a cop out. It's just a way. And it's like evacuation, like we talked about before, where you just kind of engage in escapism and you're not thinking about what you're really doing. You're just kind of going with the flow. But what's the flow? So yeah, I love that you brought that up about the devil made me do it.
Yeah. And I found the link. I put it in the chat for you.
I saw that. You're quick. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know if you had any more comments about that, Alex.
Well, it's funny. I've been in a few meetings, like record label meetings, where this is like in the early days when I was like still like young and a bit like exploring everything, you know, in the industry. So I wasn't quite sure what was going on. So like they told me, you know, come along for a few of these sessions so you can get a picture, so you're up to date with what we're doing. So I went to this record label meeting. This was my very first time. And in there, besides the creative people, there were like two psychologists in there as well. And I was like extremely silent for like an hour or so, because I was trying to figure out why are we having it wasn't an annual one. It was something that we did, a quarterly meeting, I suppose. So why are there psychologists in the room? You know, what exactly we're discussing here? And what they were talking about is riding the wave of what is trending and what people are feeling based on current affairs and events and things like that, to kind of mark the direction of where songs will go stylistically and lyrically. Which I thought that was very interesting, because that's what Brandon just said about influencers, and I would add managers as well. So like managing the trends is something that if you get hold of doing, it doesn't mean that you can, we'll steer them all the way down to hell. It's like you're steering consciousness on that very basic level of like, of the music side of it. So I met all these people who are influencers and managers, and because I was always interested in the occult, I was always interested to kind of get a glimpse of the hidden hand, you know? And all I saw was just grabbly behavior and kind of a thirst to earn more money and more success rather than kind of lead people astray, so to speak, if you know what I mean. So like really retarded lyrics and and common ridiculous themes kind of jump on from one to the other, and then it just eventually becomes this, you know, horrific thing talking about just immoral, just guns, not immoral guns, guns, immorality, and just craziness. You know, I think it's a gradual thing. It's like a snowball effect.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what you said about influencing, it's kind of like what politicians do. These people, they just really lead from behind. Mm-hmm. You know, you see a trend out there. We'll take Trump, right? Donald Trump. He saw that a lot of people in the Midwest and along the borders and stuff were upset about the immigration, right? So he's just got up there and nobody was saying anything about it because it was taboo. So he just got up there and was like, we're going to build a wall, you know, build and everyone's like, yeah, we'll get behind that. Right. And so they did. So they just ran right behind him. And it's the same kind of thing. They're like, they just have these temperatures out there. And it's really interesting that they had psychologists or whatever, you know, we'll just say experts in human psychology in there. Wow. I like that I found that out. I mean, interesting.
I thought it was very interesting as well, because it was my first experience. Since then, I've seen it before, and it doesn't happen over meetings like that, because now, you know, you have the internet, so you don't have these really big get-togethers, you know. It's like people say, hey, why don't you change that, you know, change a few of those phrases because they're a bit cheesy. And by cheesy, what people mean are something that kind of, well, you know what cheesy means, but I mean, it's very strange that, like, humble views have become cheesy. Like, a couple of decades ago, that was like...
based views.
You know what's amazing? I'm going to steal the show for a second, because I've been listening to The Silmarillion by J.R.R. Tolkien. And it's a history of Middle Earth, because I'm a nerd. And it talks about the whole creation story of Middle Earth and everything. It's very interesting. One thing I noticed right at the end of the whole two book series, they talk about, so if you're familiar with Lord of the Rings, you know, Aragorn, and he's the king and everything. So they talk about the Dúnedain and his line of people and all those kings. And there's a point where those people get very corrupted, and the line's dying, and there's like a queen left. So this gravelly guy who wants power marries her and then just makes himself the king. And then he just makes this whole, you know, he just builds all these warships and all this stuff. And they're like, we're going to go after Sauron. You guys know what Sauron is, right? The evil eye. But he's actually a person now. Well, not a person, but he's in a form.
Before he becomes the eye.
Yeah. He's in a form where he can resemble a person and become very handsome and like really good looking. So they go to fight him, and he comes out and just gives up. He's like, I can't fight these guys. They're way too more powerful at this time. So he's like, I give up. Why don't, and then the king's like feeling mighty. He's like, all right, I can't leave you here. I'm going to take you in my kingdom with me. You're going to be a prisoner there. And over the years, he basically runs the place, because he just like plays to everybody's ego, and he's really smart, and he just pretends to love him and get along, but he hates him secretly the whole time. And I love that, because it really shows how people slowly change. In the crux of the whole thing, the reason he was able to get a foothold and the reason they even started to get corrupted in the beginning was because they feared death. Now, these guys were humans, they were men, but they lived up to like 500 years still. But they wanted, after a while, they wanted to live forever. And I thought it was really interesting. It was the fear of death that got them in the end. It was just a little bit of fear, and they couldn't live with it. They wanted to be immortal. And there was even one point where one of the elf emissaries, whatever, came over from the Western lands and was like, listen, you guys got to quit this shit. You know, you're men. You were given the gift of death. That's a gift. He's like, we got to stay here forever, man. It sucks. Basically, he didn't say it like that, but he's like, it's a different thing. So I think that that's really where this all comes from, is fear. Because even when you're out there and you're peacocking and you're talking about all your Bentleys, and oh, I came up with a funny term, by the way, a Rentley. You rent a Bentley. Yeah. I wrote it down because I didn't want to interrupt you before, but yeah, I got my Rentley. And
what I like it.
What you're really doing is you're just a person. I could just say it could be seen how they're coming from a place of fear, because mm-hmm. they want people to accept them because they're afraid to not be accepted, or they're afraid of this. So they're just talking about all this stuff instead of, like you said, humble lyrics that now become cheesy. And to bring this all yeah. around, the words are what get changed. And that's just like Sauron did. He's talking to these people. At first he's evil, and then he just gets in with them. And after the years, he just starts to change the whole speech, and words mean different things, just like they do now. Like cheesy means, oh, I'm humble and I want to have a family and take care of my kids. Nobody wants to hear about that in a rap song. MC fucking Homestead, get out of here. What are you doing? We want to hear about bitches and blunts, you know, come on. It's cheesy. It's like, yeah. Well, and it's funny, even country music, which was the original of that,
cheesy,
now became pop also. You know, now it's just like you listen to a country station and it's just like listening to a rock station. It's just a little different, you know, but the message is pretty much the same. And it's funny because South Park had an episode probably in the mid-2000s, and it was about like half the people wanted to go to war and the other half didn't. And they used the division of music. Mm-hmm. They had this concert, and it was like, I'm a little bit country and I'm a little bit rock and roll. But now everybody, it's still the kind of the same, you know. It's, I mean, it's a little different, but it's like vanilla and like, you know, extra vanilla. That's the flavors we got. So
mm-hmm. yeah, there's a lot of blending of genres that has happened over the years. And country, I feel like country is not as country as it used to be.
I used to
if hate I listened country to music.
I'm just gonna say I used to hate the old stuff, and now I actually like the old stuff, and I can't stand the new stuff because of that. It's so weird, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's, I'm just talking about how it's just been blended, and it's just a lot of crossovers.
Yeah, which
musical genres?
Some of the crossovers in the beginning, like when they blend it, it's actually good stuff, you know.
Yeah, it's pretty cool when they do. I kind of like when they blend stuff.
Genres. Yeah, like if you think of Run DMC and Aerosmith, Walk This Way, that was like one of the first blends like that. Mm-hmm. And it was actually really good. But then you're right, after a while, it just, you know, that was like an artistic expression, like we were talking about earlier. They painted it, and now they're just like splattering stuff against the wall.
Could it be?
Could it be?
Yeah. So there is this concept of energy and frequencies and, you know, 432 hertz and stuff. What can you tell us about your thoughts on that, Alex?
Yeah, I mean, many people claim to feel a difference. And the truth is, when you fluctuate from one to the other, you get a sudden sense that it's like shifted completely. Whereas if you kind of tune any instrument that you're surrounded with to 432, in a long period of time, you'll get so comfortable to it, where if you hear anything that's tuned to the typical 440 hertz cycles.
It hurts. No.
Yeah. Then you get a sense of anxiety. Now, I mean, the very technical stuff, I can't really speak, but I mean, I think 432 is derived from the Schumann resonance number of hertz kind of thing, which I'm not quite sure if I'm saying this correctly scientifically. But it does make you feel more comfortable.
Have you noticed, you know, it physically yourself?
Well,
it's okay. You can be, I mean, if you don't, you don't.
Well, it depends. I mean, there are some instruments that I've played with that cannot be tuned differently. It's like those, what do you call them? The steel drums.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Those, Brandon, what do you call those?
Either tongue drums or pan drums.
Pan drums, yeah, yeah. Yeah, there you go. I mean, I've played with those, and they are actually constructed in a certain pitch and frequency that cannot be changed. Oh, it's not like a guitar or a piano.
That's true. Yeah, I didn't even think of that.
So it does get very trippy when you're playing with those. But then again, it gets very trippy when you play with any instrument and you're kind of really getting in the zone. It might be a harp, you know, it could be a piano. So I really think it depends on the intention. I really do believe it depends on the intention, because I can take any of these tracks, like with the Rentley or any kind of hip hop, new hip hop, trap music, whatever, and I can pitch it down to 432 and give it back to you, hand you a collection of all these yucky themed songs, but tuned in 432, you know.
Right.
You'll feel just as sick, I think, really, you know.
I think I totally get what you're talking about. And I'm glad you said that, because I think there's definitely something to intention. And when that music was created, what was the intention of the lyrics? What was the intention of the music? And how is it being played? And what is the intention of the listener as they're listening to that music too?
Mm-hmm.
Because even if the intention of the writer or the lyricist or the song composer was maybe not so good, but the person listening has a way to interpret it that makes it kind of like, I just thought of your song, where it's your intention for that song was different than what the intention was for the listener of mm-hmm. the actual end of the song that became what the song became. Right. Mm-hmm. So the way you wrote it was totally had a different intention.
You're talking about the Sun Song?
The Sun Song. Mm-hmm. And then the listeners to the Sun Song in the commercials, that was a different intention.
Exactly.
And, right. And yet it still can be good, but it's different. Right. So mm-hmm. even the person listening to a song can make that intention their own, and it can be good for them as well. So the concept of the 432 hertz being the, like you said, the angelic, you know, mm-hmm. version, like you must write all your music in 432 hertz, you know, it's like, you know, we live in this kind of gravelly world, and right now we mm-hmm. have 440. So let's do with it what we can. Let's make the best of it. And if that's what you have, that's just do it, because the intention truly behind it is what counts, I think. And I think it counts more than even just the bass frequency of what it is.
Yeah, I think you make a great point, because it's like anything else, right? It's like even if you're eating, or if you're whatever you're doing, you're trying to eat clean. Sometimes you can't. Sometimes you gotta eat something. It's like, you're just doing the best. And I think focusing on the good that you're doing is better than focusing on the bad that you're doing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's that same kind of thing. Oh, God.
No, really. Really good points.
Yeah. I just thought of something. So it's like, if the three of us got together and we were like, okay, let's build this huge structure that will have a huge speaker inside, and the whole purpose is to kind of have healing properties and tones that kind of soothe, you know, your soul and your body and your entire biology. Kind of what would we tune that to? So like, I would get a bit more serious when it comes to that, because if you look at the structure of what 440 hertz and all its subdivisions and et cetera create, they do seem to have a more chaotic structure than 432 hertz. So like, I would differentiate, what would you list? I mean, if I was going to tune my hip hop track to 432, it wouldn't really matter, because what you do have is one huge sub bass, a nasty snare drum, distorted vocals, auto-tuned, you don't really care. But I mean, if the whole concept is to create a cathedral, recreate, or let's fix up these cathedrals that are already in existence,
right.
that appear to have lots of properties. Different uses. Yeah.
Right.
So if they were used in a different way, and I do believe they were quite sophisticated in their choice of patterns and everything. These patterns do actually seem to point to the actual tuning of anything other than 440. Not always 432, but it's very interesting that all these structures and their windows and everything, you know, they do kind of repeat, like Sharon, exactly behind you, like this thing you have, maybe the subdivisions. I don't know how many subdivisions there are, but, you know, these kinds of patterns, like in 440, they're extremely dense and extremely spiky, and you can't really make sure of, you can't recreate the same structures that cathedrals have.
Interesting.
If that makes any sense, you know?
I mean, I think I know what you're saying, like, okay, because I've seen those videos of, you have like a sand on this on this machine that like vibrates at certain frequencies. And when you change the frequency, you get these different cymatic patterns. And then you can actually see some of those patterns resemble the windows in the churches and the cathedrals. They look like those, like similar to the ones that you see that the sand makes, or even water can make. When you vibrate that panel or whatever that thing is at a certain frequency, if I'm saying that correctly.
Yeah, more or less. Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of people that have done more research on this, definitely. Well, I haven't done any research. I've just come across some videos of people talking
about
it.
We're just oversharing, everybody. We're just
oversharing. Yeah, I mean, we don't know what we're talking about.
They just want to be
entertained. I have no idea what I'm talking about.
The category is entertainment. Look, the category under the video, entertainment.
This is all for entertainment purposes. We're all comedians today.
Yeah, I'm not a musician. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. We're all artists. How about that?
Yeah.
Of some sort.
Exactly.
Yeah, so very, very, okay, but you were saying if we were to recreate those things in those cathedrals, etc.
Yeah, I mean, that's when I would get more serious about making a choice. Yeah, so it's like releasing the track. It's like, I've had this question many times, like I produce something, I get it out there. And some people come up to me, hey, dude, we know you're quite woohoo and you're woke and you're out there. Is this tuned in 432? And I'm like, yeah, what does it feel like? Does it feel like it's tuned in 432? So it says, well, yeah, kind of. It has this depth that I can't explain. I'm like, yeah, you're right. Lies. It was 440. But I mean, it's...
That's funny.
This didn't actually happen. But I've had people ask me if it was tuned in 432. And the fact that they're asking me means that do you want a confirmation with a number to feel? Don't you know how to feel already? You know.
Yeah, shouldn't it already told you? Yeah. Very interesting. Yeah, that's a very good point.
How dare you?
So I mean, if the three of us, if we were going to construct something that would be for healing purposes, then I would have to do a lot of research, because then you're being bombarded constantly by frequencies that are supposed to do good and not harm. But when you get a guitar, it doesn't really matter in what kind of...
Good point.
I'm not so... At least I'm not so sensitive to pick up on the...
Difference.
Yeah, that's for me.
I think everyone's different too. So maybe some people are just more sensitive. But and then I think also, could it be... Some people think they're more sensitive to it. You know, some of these people.
Yeah. And so here's my thought. And from my like basic, you know, I don't know what I'm talking about. 432 is just the A. That's just A, correct?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And based on that.
So like, in other words, B, C, D, E, F, G, all the, and B flat and A flat and all those other ones are just off from that, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you're only hearing the 432, the A, so many times, maybe, if you even have A in the song. Does that make sense? or like, I don't know if that's making any sense.
Pardon me. Well, kind of. I'm trying to think of another analogy. I can't think of another analogy, but
I think I know what you're saying.
It's like
only the A's, the 432. But I think what people might say is that, but that's even though it's the other keys or the other notes are off of that, but it's still based in 432. They might say to you, you know, so even those other ones that variate, they could still be healing as well, just on a different level. But what I did want to say too, though, is like a lot of times in music, you're just listening to it with earbuds and stuff like that. So it's not totally, like Alex said, it's not affecting your whole body, really. It's not going through. So I would agree. Mm-hmm. If we were going to make some kind of sound, which we should totally do, make a sound healing temple, let's do it.
Yes.
I would definitely do that or look into it further. Like you said, do some actual research and just not overshare and ponder. make wild accusations like I love to do.
I think I just quickly realized something because I've got my keyboard right here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's actually switched off at the moment because I have to connect it to the other computer. But anyway, if I were to kind of tweak this, the controls thing keyboard, that would tune just A to 432. But in consequence, because I've liked tuned the entire instrument, that would shift every single note to the equivalent multiplant. Is that a word?
I think I know what you're saying. I can't think of a word right now.
The opposite of subdivision. So you've got subdivisions of 432 and you've got the times.
Multiplier?
Multiplicant?
Multiplicant, I suppose.
Something like that. Sharon will figure it out.
I'll look it up.
Lovely. So so I think that's the whole concept of if you just get the A at 432, then everything else follows. Yeah. Oops.
Multiplicant. It's not even a word. How weird.
In Greek, there is a word. There is
polaplasia. That sounds Italian.
That's how it does, yeah.
But what is it?
Well, in Greek it's... It's sorry, that's Joe sending me a message. He's got some interesting gravy about hertz and tunings. 432. You know the guy that you spoke to in the after the premiere, my friend from.
Your friend,
he's a cool guy. He knows about this gravy. I'll find out and I'll send it your way soon. So like.
Well, maybe he'll be on the chat. In fact, he probably is. Hi, Joe.
Hey, Joe, check this.
Yeah. Speaking of the chat, thanks, everybody who's chatting. And we want to give a shout out to you guys right now because we do this every Thursday night. And we love the people who come and chat with us while we watch the premieres. Even though they're not live, we record this ahead of time. And it's great to have you guys in there. It really brightens our week. So thank you.
Yeah, some people are really freaked out about how we can be answering them without seeing our hands move.
They think we're live.
Yeah.
Because they think we're live.
They're like, wow, you're good. I'm like, I would never be able to talk.
I couldn't do it. Like, there's no way. There's no way. Going. We would not be able to like manage our
discussion. Do a live stream, but that's a whole different thing.
It's a different animal. Totally different animal.
Yeah, well, we haven't edited anything. So it's more or less live. Well, not live, but I mean, we haven't tampered with anything. So
I just send it straight out unless somebody specifically is like, hey, can you cut out the part where I'm going to like, you know, talk about
blah, blah, blah. And that hasn't really ever happened yet.
No.
But I know. Yeah.
So the word I was looking for is multiple, just plain multiple.
Oh, the multiple of. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Multiple of. Yeah.
So I suppose I don't know if there's any more questions, but I do have a question. So I don't know. Go Brandon, ahead. Do you have anything else you want to say or any other things you want to talk about? This question is going to be more fun.
Okay. The one thing I did want to say before this whole thing wraps up, a note that I took from earlier when we were talking is how you got into this business. You went to a recording studio and you didn't say, can I have a job? You didn't think anything was owed to you. You were just like, hey, can I stand here and be a fly on the wall and just do everything you say and help you? And I think that's so huge because that's kind of how I started DJing. Like I was 31 or whatever, I can't remember, but I met a friend of mine who did all this stuff, and I went along with him, and I was like, I'll just help you carry equipment. And he paid me $50 to stand there and watch him DJ. And I didn't even care about that. I was like, I'm getting $50 for this. Sweet. You know? And then I just went with him, and that's what happened. Like, I watched other people who wanted to, they said they wanted to become a DJ, but they just didn't either have the time or they couldn't put in enough sacrifice, I guess. And that's really all I did, was I just my time and attention and just being there. And that's, I think, how you can, it's a really good way to become successful. You don't even have to go to school for what it is. Whatever you want to do, just go to where people do it and ask them if you can give them a hand. And I'm sure they'll help you. That's how I got into the Illuminati, everybody. I was like, hey, I see you guys controlling the world. And can I just stand here and watch the you guys? World. Can I just come to like a Bilderberg meeting and watch the orgy? No. So now I control the world, and that's great. But
you only influence it.
How dare you, Sharon? I control it. Oh, yeah, you're right. I do influence the world. I mean, you know, to a small degree, but this show's grown. I love it. So it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. What you were saying about, it's a kind of a sync that you said that, both of you said, like, you just like volunteered your time or whatever, just to learn something. It reminds me. Yeah. Of this concept that I just heard about, New Year's Eve. I was hanging out with some friends, and, the husband of my friend was talking about this movement, that this guy, Michael Tellinger, is doing. I don't know if you've heard of him. He has a YouTube channel, michaeltellinger.com. T-E-L-L-I-N-G-E-R is how you spell his last name. And what he's doing is he's starting these, this movement of these communities in like a small town, let's say, of about 10,000 people, and getting in contact with the mayor to see if the mayor's okay with doing something like this. And essentially, all these businesses that, you know, they're basically small town businesses in these small towns, right? Whether it's a bakery or a pub or whatever it is. And you basically, the people that live in the town can go to these businesses and volunteer 3 hours a week to learn about stuff in exchange for, you know, whatever, like if they're at somebody's farm, then it's like eggs or something, right? In exchange for some eggs, they volunteer 3 hours a week. But basically they're learning to be like self-sustaining type thing, where the whole village, the whole community learns about this, and then they don't have to rely on the big corporations for stuff because they can rely on each other. So it's really interesting. And he says that there's, he's already started stuff. Several countries already have like one or two of these towns going. And then the States, I believe it's starting, and I think it's in Texas, close to Austin or something like that, where there's a couple of towns that are going to get started with that soon. But it's a very interesting concept. And I think, I don't know if I don't think Owen Benjamin knows about it. I don't think Crow knows about it, you know, people like that. But it's something that makes sense for a lot of us who are wanting to go in that direction, right? Because you can, if you want to learn something, you know, apprenticeship is the best way. Like, anymore, going to a school, an indoctrination camp, a university, whatever, that's BS. I mean, I have no desire to learn about what's written in a book. I'd rather like, and I always thought it was so weird growing up when you'd go to school and you learn all this freaking theory that doesn't apply to the real life. And then you go to work and you learn something totally different. It just made no freaking sense to me. Like, how the hell did I just learn all this stupid crap in university? And like, I don't really even need or use it over here. I mean, at least
Yeah,
I really didn't.
Even but, like, and people will argue like, well, what about a doctor? I'm like, I'd rather have a doctor that was raised by his dad that was a doctor, showing him what to do, and maybe exactly. like a you know, maybe some kind of schooling that you go off to for like a year or something. But you know, this crazy like 8 years of indoctrination. Yeah,
no, crap.
You need your black square on your head, unless you know. Who? Otherwise, me? You don't know anything. Well, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. The Masonic. Everything is like. Everything that has to do with the university is Masonic, right? The the ceremony, the gown that you wear and everything, allegedly all that's Masonic from what I've heard. But
yeah, what's the university in Cambridge, right? It's been there for 1,000 years, allegedly, you know, so.
Allegedly.
Mean, yeah.
Yeah. So
that's interesting, Sharon, what you said. Yeah, I would love to participate in anything like that. Yeah, I'm seeking opportunities. So if something was organized like that, I would definitely go. Yeah.
Right. I'll send you a couple of the latest videos I've seen of his. I'll send them to you.
Yeah.
Or we cool. can, I mean, we can even post them in the links. In the links below.
Yeah, good idea.
If Brandon wants to.
Yeah, send them to me. I'll put them in. Well, I also put links to some of Alex's stuff. So, you know, we'll put a link to
Olive Tree Bear channel.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that would be perfect. Nice. Yeah.
Perfect.
Yay.
So make sure you go to Olive Tree Bear's channel and subscribe and like all the videos.
Now.
Yes.
So what was your fun question?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
No, you were going to say some Alex. What were you going to say?
I was just curious if Brandon wanted to share more about the beginning of his trip and how, I don't know if you've started sharing already, Brandon, but that sounds so fascinating. I would like to see what you would be able to participate in music-wise and, you know, creative-wise other than the show, I suppose. And other than the show and, of course, documenting your life. I mean, will you be able to do musical things on the road?
Well, I will have a USB mic with me. That's the same mic that I'm using right now. I have two of them. This one's plugged into a interface, but I have a USB one and it's a pretty decent mic. So I will be able to do that stuff. And yeah, I'm pretty excited because we're going down. I'm going to go down to South Carolina and see Adam, who's been on the show.
I'm not saying
that he lives there, everybody. I'm just saying I'm going there. And then we're gonna stop and meet more people in Alabama. And then we have plans to stop in Colorado from there. And then we're gonna meet up with Sharon in Sedona, Arizona.
Yay!
So yeah, we can totally see something.
Yeah. And
yeah, I could do, that's the thing too. I'll have a lot of, well, I'm guessing I'll have a lot of free time. So, that's when I want to try to start working on stuff like that. That'd be a lot of fun, I think.
Mm-hmm. I'm having a quick look on the map to see where you're going.
Yeah,
that's quite a long road. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be. Yeah, it's crazy how in this country you could just drive forever. You know?
Yes.
One great gift that we have that people really take for granted, even though with the current madness that's going on, you could still travel. I mean, even during the whole March 2020 lockdown, when you weren't supposed to go anywhere, people were still traveling.
People were really still doing a hard time. Yeah.
It's just it's the influencers that are telling you. Like my a family member was afraid to come down from two states away to go to my brother's wedding. And, you know, I was just like, no one's going to care. Like, nobody.
Yeah.
What are they going to say? The cop? Come on. No cop wants to say
seriously. Yeah. People were traveling for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, well, we didn't finish the reading, so we can do that maybe now or after I ask my fun question. What do you think, Brandon?
Ask your question.
Okay. So, Alex, I don't want to put you on the spot, but what is one genre that you really don't use or write music to, or I think you've told me before.
Have I? No. Well, I mean,
jazz.
I mean, Oh, jazz. Look, there's plenty of genres. I mean, like, you guys are very familiar with the whole, just even the sound of country music, but I don't have any reference of country music.
Okay.
Being in Europe and Greece, I mean, right. I'm so behind. I'm like, there was this one song I used to like back like 20 years ago by Lone Star. It was called Amazed.
Amazed, yeah, that's huge.
Amazed. That was a lovely song. I'm like, this is a beautiful song. And then when I looked into it, I'm like, hey, not all country music is so cool and so well produced, you know.
Yeah.
And then I did a bit more digging, you know, and I found out, and I'm like, okay, this is something that I'm not really, it's not running through my veins, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I wouldn't just automatically, I'm going to write a country song now. Also, jazz music, we talked about this before privately, is something which I am a bit intimidated, because I was more of a classical kind of heavy metal, electronic, a completely different direction, you know, of music. So my dad was always, you know, insisting that I kind of discover jazz music. But to me, it never felt 100%. And also, I felt like I wasn't discovering it on my own. I was like pushed onto jazz music. And back then, being a teenager, I didn't like to be pushed anywhere, you know, even if it was something really helpful for my musical understanding. Unfortunately, I avoided it because I was like, you know, hey, check this out. No.
Exactly.
So unfortunately,
I have a funny story about that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, that's all. I mean, it's country music. I wouldn't really experiment much with any kind of ethnic music, obviously, which I'm not familiar with, because like Asian music and things like that. If it's something you don't have in your culture, obviously, it's something you won't ever experiment with. It'd be interesting if I started doing Chinese music, you know. What is Alex doing? Exactly.
They have music? No, I'm just kidding. I thought they just made iPhones all day. And if you're Chinese and you don't like this and you're complaining, shut up and go make an iPhone. No, I don't even have an iPhone.
Go make a Samsung. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. So my funny short story is that when I was in college, I was like you, where I was like, I don't like anyone forcing me or telling me that I need to do something or that I should do something, and pushing me into it, you know? So like when I would hear people like, oh, you need to go watch this movie, it just came out, it's so good, sometimes I'd be like, nah, I don't feel like it. I don't want to watch it. And sometimes it would be like, I already knew that I didn't feel like watching it, wasn't attractive to me. Like it wasn't even like something that I wanted. And so if the more people were like, no, you need to, then I'd be like, no, I'm not going, you know, I'm not going to see it. That's how I'd be so annoyed.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I get it.
So I had this friend, who was kind of was a little bit like pushy with stuff, especially about EDM music, which I didn't know a thing about. Okay. And it was like late 90s, early 2000s. And he was like, you have to listen to this. Like, this is really good. And I'm like, nah, not really. Wanting to learn new music, I just not there right now, you know. And I would just push it, like, just I don't know that.
Salt and Pepper, you don't know Push It?
No. Oh, I don't know that.
Push
song.
It good. Push it real good. Yo, baby pop, come here, give me a kiss. Oh, yeah, dude. You better make it last, because I'm going to be pissed. Oh, yeah, that's like, I met a lovely young lady in Italy. She was from Slovakia, I think, or something like that. Or No, she was Czech. She didn't speak one word of English, but she knew Salt and Pepper Push It.
That's
amazing.
She's like, American? She's like, you know, however, she was an Italian. So she wasn't like, Americano? She was like, oh, Salt and Pepper Push It? I was like, yeah. Push it real good. I didn't get to push it to end that story, just so anyone. She was one of the most beautiful women I think I've seen in my life. So I was just happy to talk to her and have a good conversation. Aww. Yeah, but anyway, it was fun times. Yeah. Italy, yeah. Everybody. I highly suggest it. It's a wonderful place.
Where?
Yeah, Italy? Northern Italy. Yeah, in Bibione and Legnano, the two beaches that are really nice. They're not too far from Venice. So you could go to Venice, Trieste, all that stuff, and you can hit up the beaches. But yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah, if you carry on further, you can go to Bernbear as well. He's quite close to there.
Yeah.
I would love to go to Bernbear. Are you kidding me? I need a boat. I need a ship. We need a sailboat.
We need airships, man.
Bernbear needs to come here.
Yeah.
He needs to visit us.
How do you guys see? Will we be able to travel eventually? I mean, without ridiculous.
I think so. Yeah. I think it's coming.
I think so. This is the way it's been coming to me. You know how like guns and abortion and like all these hot, like healthcare, there's these hot topic items. I think whatever the hell this is, we won't even name it.
Yeah.
What we've been suffering under. It's going to be.
Yeah, I don't like naming it.
I think it's going to become one of those issues, and some places are going to be. You know, just like it is with guns, like in Connecticut, you can't even buy ammunition unless you have, you can't go to the store and buy bullets unless you have a, you have to have a pistol permit or an ammunition buying certificate, which is the same process as getting a pistol permit. So people just get the pistol permit, which is an extensive, like my parents applied over a year ago and they still haven't gotten it, which is, you know, if it was me, I probably would have looked into it and gotten it. But still, even when I got it in 2012, it took like 6 months. So So I think this is going to be one of those other issues where, but I don't think it's going to get to the, I mean, it could, but I don't think it's going to get to the point where we're actually going to have to take a medical serum, an experimental medical serum through an injection to fly. But I don't know, but I don't think so.
I think it'll dissipate. Over
it's going to flip back around. Yeah. But, and then some people will still be serious about it and some won't, and it'll just be one of these other annoying things. Some people are going to like have bumper stickers of masks to show that they support it. And, you know, like some people are going to be like, I want my abortion and my mask and fuck your guns. And then some people be like, I want my guns, fuck your abortion and fuck your mask. And they're just going to fucking go to McDonald's together and eat it all in peace.
TV.
Exactly. It's the world. I feel like that's just how it goes. It just goes on and on. It happened in the 1920s, allegedly. I wasn't there, but from what I've seen and heard, they were making people wear masks then. So,
Yeah.
So I know it takes me for freaking ever to tell a story, but I'll finish my story.
Please do.
So he keeps trying to get me to listen to this music. I don't know how he did it. At some point, I don't know how I gave in, but maybe I was feeling like open to trying to listen to new type of music or something. And I guess he had given me these mixed tape type things, but not tapes. They were CDs. So he'd made me like a couple of mixed CD albums of stuff. And I guess I must have been like in the mood to like learn or listen to new music. And then I was like hooked on like trance. And then I was like listening to like trance radio. And I was just like, dude, this stuff is the bomb. This stuff is the shit. So yeah, it's funny. Like I just had to be in the mode for it. But like when someone like pushes too much, it's just like, no, I get it.
Yeah.
So anyway, Brandon, would you like to tell us your thoughts on the Knight of Cups?
Yes, let's do it. Hang on. Let me do this. Go back to gallery mode. Okay, so the Knight of Cups. Cups represent a chalice, anything that can hold water. So a cup is very tied to water and emotions and feelings. And how we also how we kind of interact with other people through our feelings and the things that we feel. And court cards represent, just like in a regular deck of cards, the king and the queen and stuff. But we have a knight, which you don't have in a normal deck of cards. And the knight just represents mastery in that particular suit, and then also in motion, because the knight is seated upon a horse. So it gives you the impression that he's moving around somewhere. And for this card, like I said in the beginning of the show, I think it really does represent Alex, because he is this person, and you can hear it from the whole, this whole show, you know, how he started off. He just went there. He's like, I want to know how this is done. Then he just did it. And then he became successful, and he just kept following it and being around the right people and meeting the right people. So that's really the Knight of Cups in action. And I think a lot of it has to do with the way he makes people feel. And I know that he makes me feel at ease. Every time I talk to him on the phone, I feel great. He's a, you know, such a warm, bubbly person, really looks at life the kind of the same way I do, in a humorful way, you know, because honestly, I think that if they're, I think that, you know, whatever you say, the all father, God, whatever, whoever this creator is, has a great sense of humor, because the things that I see happen in the world, it's it could be viewed a lot from a place of humor. That's why I'm a comedian, actually. So I think that, you know, that Knight of Cups and what it represents really does represent you going out there in the world and sharing your gifts. And then because of that, you're able to be sustained. Look at the knight. He has really nice clothes. He has a nice horse. You know, he's not on this beat up horse. It's really well fed. It has really nice raiments about it and everything. And he's, but in this card, you want to hold it up again, Sharon? You could see he's kind of like stopped, and he's in a moment of maybe contemplation. So this is a part where, you know, you have your feelings. Then you have the moon there at the top of the card, which is great too. So it's like, maybe it's a period of time for you to go inside and within and to trust your own feelings, you know, because they've worked for you and everyone else before. So now you want, and there you see water in the card too, represented by those lines. So it could mean that you came to an obstacle, and right now you're just trying to figure out how you're going to come across it. But you've had many obstacles in your past that you've overcame before. So it just looks like more of an excitement, kind of like me going on my trip, you know, it's just going to be an adventure. So wow, I'm excited for it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'll just read what the little book says.
Yeah.
Because I think it really describes him.
Yeah.
It says, you are romantic, charming, and in love with love itself. You wear your heart on your sleeve. You thrive on all things beautiful and are inspired by the many creative outlets that are available to you.
Precisely. Yeah.
I think that's totally Alex. The Knight of Cups.
In a nutshell. And hey, listeners, if you like what I just did, I do readings. So hit me up. Brandon@comedylol.com is my email address. So send me an email. Sharon does readings too.
I do.
And I happen to know that they're awesome, because she's given me, I don't know, a million, and they're great. So.
Thank you.
No problem. Well, I think we come to the end of this episode. Is there anything else you'd like to say to the fine people, Alex?
Nothing really. I mean, I've been trying to catch up on your episodes. I mean, I love what you're doing from day one. Oh, it's taken me a while to catch up, because it's always like either too late for me, or I just have like a long playlist of, you know, things that I've got in line, you know, on YouTube. But I really like what you guys are doing. I can't wait to see what the format will be like when you're not sitting down in that chair, you know. That'll be crazy. Yeah. You'll be on the road. That's going to be fantastic. I mean, your viewers will see very interesting things. I mean, I'm sure this channel is going to progress and kind of become something even more widespread, I'm sure.
Well, with your blessing, I'm sure it will be even better now. So thank you. I appreciate it.
Yes, you have my bless.
My son. No, I'm just kidding.
That's my life. My son.
Oh, okay.
Because of the, you know, I look like Jesus, kind of, everyone tells me. That's what people tell me, everyone. I'm not claiming it. But yeah, I've said that to somebody in person. They were like, oh my God, you look like Jesus. And I'm like, yes, my son. I was like leaving a bar or club or whatever really late this over the summer. I was going to visit a DJ friend of mine, and I'm coming out, and there's this group, and it was like a group of people that they say are from Africa, but I think they're from here. But anyway, the girl was like, you look like Jesus. And I was like, yes, I'm my child. That's what I said. I'm like, my child. And they're like, ah! It was so funny.
Well, if you're the Spaniard Jesus, then Alex is the blonde Jesus.
Yeah, exactly.
It's funny. You look more Greek than I look Greek. Random. Like, nobody expects me to be Greek. It's like, what do you mean Greek?
Yeah, when I was in,
you're blonde.
Yeah, I got mistaken for an Italian when I was in Italy. Some guy came up to me. He was American. He was like an Air Force guy. He started trying to speak to me in Italian. I'm like, I'm American, bro. He's like, whoa.
I'm your buddy over here.
Yeah. Easy. Funny. Yeah.
Awesome.
That's awesome.
All right. Yeah. Well, Sharon, what do we say at the end of the show again? How's that going?
What? Huh? That if you're not over Sharon,
then you're totally not Karen.
That's right.
Love That's it.
Right. All right. You don't have to hang up, Alex. We're just going to end the show. Thanks, everybody. And we'll talk to you soon.